The opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're in the Delaware Valley. Welcome to the Pearson Coucher Show. I'm your co-host, Joe Dougherty. We have a phenomenal show for everybody today. Very, very interesting times, as we all know. We are going to... be talking to some outstanding attorneys. We're going to be explaining a lot that has to do with, the coronavirus and a legal approach to it. I'm going to bring in our host, John Coucher, to the broadcast. How are you, John?
I'm good, Joe. A little under the weather, but I'm excited for our hour here and ready to roll.
Well, I'll tell you, John, this is certainly... never thought I'd ever see a day like today. No question about it. We have Jerry Williams in the pinch hitting in the driver's seat. How are you today, Jerry?
Good, Joe.
It's great to have you here. It's definitely a difficult day. And Mark Levithan, our sponsor from Weinemann Pain and Wellness. How are you today, sir?
I'm well, Joe. How's yourself? Conditions permitting.
Yeah, no, I'm thankfully doing well, gentlemen. We have a situation, and I know, John, you're under the weather, so it's certainly you never know the paranoia in today's climate, and maybe rightfully so. No question about it. It is very difficult. Mark, I want to ask you: have you ever seen and did you ever think in your lifetime that you would see a quarantine type situation? And what's your perspective?
Yeah, no, Joe, we're in uncharted territory right now, and a lot of people are making light of this, but it's real, it's a real issue, a real problem. I was just talking to one of our physicians, Dr. Talone, and they were talking about a hospital in North Jersey where 90 of the healthcare workers have been infected by people coming into the hospital, and it's a real problem.
You never think, and I think a lot of the precautions are based on hospital and making sure that our hospital system can work for everybody. Let me bring in John Coucher to the conversation. John, your perspective as of today.
Well, it is. It's trying times. Our office is. We have a skeleton staff in Philadelphia, and our office in the Lehigh Valley, in Bethlehem. We can all work remotely. All of our clients know how to get in touch with us, and we're sending constant email messaging to them. Hopefully, this lasts. Only a few more weeks, a month, as lockdowns become more prevalent, closures become more prevalent, and the virus can be contained to the point where it doesn't put as much pressure on the healthcare systems. You watch TV and they say flattening the curve. That's what we need. But it's an unusual virus because it spreads so quickly. And from a workers' compensation perspective, it's something that can be pursued. And we can talk about that a little later. There are some challenges, but it certainly has appeared on our radar screen. And we are implementing a plan to help potential clients who do call us with exposure and subsequent illness.
Yeah, I'm gonna bring in Jerry Williams, who's John's guest today from Williams Cedar. Jerry, how are you today?
Good, Joe.
Your perspective from your standpoint. I want to get everybody's perspective, and then we're going to start getting into some of the meat and potatoes. But tell me where you're coming from.
Well, just as John said, I mean, this is a challenge on a couple of different levels. For lawyers, just like it is for everybody else, our staff is being put on a rotating as need basis. We're also doing as much, like John's firm, as we can digitally, keeping in touch with our clients. Even the courts have weighed in. You know, in Philadelphia, in the federal courts, and I believe now in the Court of Common Pleas, jury trials have all been postponed. The courts may have to do more in the next few days. They may have to accommodate legal needs that can't be addressed digitally, things like statutes of limitations. These may have to be extended, but only the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania can do that. We don't know the full extent of what the courts will do. And also, as John said, there may, which we can discuss later on, be legal implications of this disease and the way it's being handled. Social distancing is very important. There are some populations that can't social distance. Good example is our prison population, which is medically undertreated to begin with, and exists in generally crowded and pretty poor conditions. There may very well be serious illnesses in populations like that.
Absolutely. And in fact, I know of a particular situation where they just stopped allowing visitors. And so it's definitely, Mark, as a practice that, you know, treats injured workers and injury victims, what are the adjustments that you guys have made and communicating with your clients that obviously the practices that you guys do at Weinemann Pain and Wellness, obviously sanitation and sanitary conditions are a priority.
Yes, that's correct. We're doing the best we can to try to keep everything as clean and sanitary as possible. Everything gets wiped down after every patient. You know, we're a little different than, I guess, the attorneys involved, where, you know, we have people coming in that need to be treated. So we can't, unfortunately, do that remotely. We just can't do that over a computer. So we do have patients that are coming in, patients that are of high risk. We're getting patients all the time that are canceling, you know, due to the fact that either, you know, they have respiratory issues or diabetic issues or different things. So they're putting their treatments on hold for, you know, 30 days or whatever the case may be. And we're just, you know, we're monitoring this hour by hour and day by day to just find out, you know, what we're going to do. Hopefully we can stay open, but if we can't, we'll have to close.
Let me ask you a question. Having said that, to the lawyers and John Coucher, with Mark said, you know, you have individuals who are in a situation where they need treatment. Now, typically, compliance is a big part of the requirements in regards to an injury victim or an injured worker. What do you think? You know, do you see the court systems, you know, obviously giving a little leeway there to in understanding that if an injured worker, because they're hurt, they're in bad shape as it is, but obviously this particular situation affects everybody.
Yeah, I do. I think the PA workers' comp system runs at an administrative court level. So, you know, it's not governed by the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. Case law may be, but the way it runs is through an administrative level. And there have been several emails from the director of the Bureau of Workers' Compensation hoping that we can transition from a hearing-based system to digital, and it's going to take some time. We've been actually, even before the virus has been spreading, requesting that this happen for many, many months before, just because it's easier for a lot of parties and especially injured workers to have to travel to a court and appear. But I think if you are in a situation where there's a time deadline, especially with the filing of papers with a judge, briefs with a judge, the time to take a scheduled deposition pursuant to a judge's scheduling order. I think those will be relaxed. I don't know yet what will happen in the scenario if, let's say, somebody gets hurt at work and is so ill that they can't provide notice to their boss or supervisor, and that statutory time period expires. I would think that there would be some fundamental fairness application imposed, but it's just an uncharted time, and you know, you just really hope that the court system, the judges, and even our adversaries, defense counsel, understand that this is a time that you know, nobody needs to be difficult. Everybody needs to help one another, and through that, we'll get through it.
While communicating with your clients, the injured workers, the injury victims, and keeping them abreast of the situations, important?
It is important. And you know, clients care about certain basic things on a day-to-day level. They care that you're up and running, which they know. If they're getting workers' comp, they care that their checks will continue. If they are injured, they want to make sure their doctor's office, as Mark said, is open and can continue to see them. Other than that, you know, everything else can be taken care of as any issues arise.
Mark Levithan, in your case, communicating with the clients, keeping them abreast of everything going on, is that important to you guys?
Yeah, it's extremely important. We're in constant communication with our clients, you know, and, you know, there's problem with people that, you know, I spoke to one of our young ladies that actually comes down on the L. She comes in, you know, from Northeast, and she says there were two people on the train today, and it's usually standing room only.
Right.
So, you know, I think some people are afraid to take public transportation at this point. But we do communicate with our clients, okay, and if they want to come in, as long as we can stay open, we will. And if they're afraid to come in, or they have a problem due to their health, we had one of our physicians that won't be coming in. He's out for a while now. He had a medical issue where he's, you know, susceptible as an older gentleman, and he won't be in for a while.
Sure. I mean, precautions, you know, it's important, especially at this level, to talk about, you know, individuals, you know, and for our listeners, you're listening to the Pearson Coucher Show, sponsored by Weinman Pain and Wellness, Serious Doctors with Serious Injuries. John Coucher's guests today are Jerry Williams of Williams Cedar. We have Mark Levithan of Weinman Pain and Wellness, our sponsor, on the line. And, of course, you know, we're talking about how you know, the legal community in Philadelphia and professional offices and part of the medical community are adjusting in these really uncharted times. Gentlemen, let me ask you a question in regards to, at what point, I'd like to get perspective, and I'm gonna start with Jerry Williams, perspective on at what point did you realize that, Jerry, that this thing was a little bit different and certainly the real deal?
Well, personally, I guess there were two different points, a beginning point and an acceleration point. The beginning point really is when all of Italy, and I happen to have a friend who lived in Italy, when all of Italy, which has a first-class healthcare system, by the way, went on lockdown and shut down the entire country. And it was really only a short while later that, as we were discussing, Joe, before we went on air, that professional sports began to suspend their seasons. When that happens, you know something serious is going on because the owners of those franchises are losing money when they suspend seasons, and they don't do that lightly. So there are the two turning points for me personally.
John Coucher?
I think I always saw this as a problem that potentially was going to get larger and larger, and I have a mild case of asthma. It usually flares when it's allergy season. And the more I heard from people on the news and what I read on the internet about how certain groups of people are at high risk, and now I'm one of them, I started to realize, as it made its way to mainland USA, that this was going to potentially be a problem. So I started washing my hands. I started not picking up certain objects that the virus could stay on. Tried to use hand sanitizer when I was out of the office. Tried to keep my distance from certain people. I tried to do my part, and it's one of those things that I never thought I'd see the day where a virus would paralyze the nation. But this is real and it's serious. And one of the problems is, we're getting contradictory messaging from our leaders, and that trickles down to the states who need testing capacity. And I think now it's finally at a level that can help the general public. But I think I always knew it was serious. And then as time went on, I realized that this was much worse.
Mark Levithan, when did you realize that this, at this point, that this thing is, not just a news story?
I guess when it really hit, I guess I would have to agree with Jerry when the sports started to really close down, and also when the government announced that they were going to release $2 or $3 billion to help deal with the testing and what they needed to do. I figured if the government was releasing this kind of money, there was something that was really happening, because I didn't think they were going to release that money for no reason. And that really was my turning point.
Interesting. I agree with all three in regards to the sporting team, obviously the major sports. As soon as the NBA went down, I'm like, oh my God. Okay. And certainly we're at a situation where, who was the player that was messing with the microphones?
And Gilbert.
Gilbert, right. And so, in a sense,
Gilbert.
Gilbert, right. Yeah. And yeah, it was irresponsible, but clearly he had no idea. I to persecute the guy, he clearly, I was waiting for his apology and all that, and it was completely irresponsible, no question. It was the lesson of a lifetime, because he was, for him, the chances of him actually being the first one to contract it and then spreading it to his own teammates, certainly. Go ahead, Jerry.
Well, I was going to say, but it tells you two things. One is that there have been, at the beginning of this crisis, some very bad attitudes and approaches to the problem. And that, as John indicated, part of the reason for that is because there's been misinformation coming from the very top of our leadership.
No question about it. One of the things I also, it's interesting, guys, I'll tell you, and I'm not joking, I will never forget this moment as long as I live. I was watching one of the leadership, one of the press conferences, and I came up, and it was, I think, one of the people on the panel, they thank Nancy Pelosi. I think it was Vice President Pence or one of the people, and then I heard that there was a thanking, a reciprocal thanks from Nancy Pelosi to the administration. I'm not joking when I actually say this, gentlemen. My knees buckled, because at that point, I said to myself, "Oh my God," obviously, along with the pro sports, if you start to see, a bipartisan effort at the top, and particularly with the presidential election coming and all the absolutely, the insane politics and all that stuff. At that point, I said to my wife, oh my God, there's something they know. I mean, I literally said it to my wife, several times, but this is really when if they're complimenting each other at the top and the blame game isn't in effect, they know something at that point in time in regards to the potential. What I think that is the medical system and being able to handle. I think Italy, like you mentioned, Jerry, they know what happens when they don't want the medical system to get overrun.
Right.
Let's talk about, if you would, for a second, the political climate. And And do you think that that is having, and I don't mean now, I'm talking about from when it started until up to now. We have, there was a lot of blame game going back and forth and a lot of stuff going on, and a lot of it may have been true. But to me personally, because politics is so splintered in this nation and there's such a partisan attitude, I think a lot of times at the beginning of everything, people tend to not, they just think it's politics as usual. And in a sense, because of that, you know, people may not have really bought into the seriousness of this. Jerry, you want to go first?
Well, I mean, Joe, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, and we'll probably all try to avoid being partisan here. But yes, that's a problem with the time we live in. It's not just that we're splintered. It's just that we're splintered in a way where people can disbelieve facts.
Right.
No matter that, they can see something right before their eyes and just assume that it's a plot by the other side or something that's made up by the media or something like that. And it's sort of, you know, John talked at the very beginning about some of the advantages we have in this situation. We can communicate with our clients digitally, for example, and online and through emails. But those same technologies are a big part of this problem, where people will believe anything they read online. And that's a very serious problem.
John?
Yeah, I think Jerry's absolutely right. People believe what they want to believe. They hear what they want to hear. You know, you look at some of the latest polls, and the president's approval rating really hasn't changed much throughout the crisis and the administration's handling of it. But I guess we'll see what happens at the polls if this is has a lingering effect. You know, you hope that everybody can work together. It's very difficult to understand how someone cannot take this seriously. You know, I think this is where common sense and good judgment overrides, you know, some of the propaganda that's out there.
Mark, from your perspective, being on the medical side of things, I know you're the practice manager, not the doctor, but do you think politics, you know, the way this thing kind of unraveled, had people not taking it as serious at the beginning, and where do you think we are now?
Sure. I think, everything's been so bipartisan. I mean, you know, if you forgetting about our disease, just that's happened, this virus, just go back. I mean, you know, the Democrats and Republicans, nobody can get along with anything. They can't get anything passed. They can't do anything. Then all of a sudden, when this started to happen, we really started to see, you know, people started to come together because it was really a serious thing. There were a lot of people that didn't believe it in the beginning. I mean, I was supposed to go down to spring training this week, and I canceled last week. And I had the guys who said, "Oh, Mark, you're a chicken. You're not coming down." I said, "Wait a second. I said, this is for real. I said, this is not a joke. I said, he goes, "Okay." After I canceled, I told him I wasn't coming, my friend. That's later on that afternoon, 2 hours later, is when they closed all of the spring training. I said, I guess there's a lot of chickens in the world, or maybe it's for real. And then when I saw a lot of the public companies that were standing behind the president, you had CVS, you had Walmart, you had Walgreens, you had all the big players back there, all these big, huge retailers that were going to stay open and help the public. They said, you know what, we're really competitors. But at this time, we need to work together.
Right.
You know, we need to work together. And that's really what the government needs to do. They need to work together. It's a very serious situation. And I think politics really can't play into this. They need to worry about the American people.
At this point, I totally agree. And that's why I said, you know, when I saw Pelosi and Pence going back and forth, you know, in complimentary, I'm going, oh, my God. You know, literally the world is coming to an end. I mean, I'm being sarcastic, but not really. And I, you know, because of the way our partisan politics has been. Let's talk about, John Coucher, you brought up, and Jerry, let's talk about social media. Let's talk about the media and how this thing is being communicated. And so not only are we in different times, okay, and this is uncharted territory, but also communication-wise, you know, the you know, what everybody, every 15 minutes, there's another expert on talking about don't worry or do worry. Or you have, you know, the people, you know, the general public on social media. John, what is your thought process with in regards to social media's effect on what's going on?
I, from my personal perspective, I found social media to be a positive and a negative. It's a positive because it gets information out very quickly. it's been a negative that a lot of that information, at least from my own personal experience, has not been accurate. And my son was studying abroad in Germany, and we were monitoring the virus's spread in Germany for a while. And his college was constantly updating us as to what their plans were. And the president's address and his social media messaging right after his address, I think that was Wednesday night, was terribly confusing. And it lacked the detail that not only that we needed as a family, but thousands of other people needed, because nobody was sure if a U.S. citizen would be barred from coming into the United States if they didn't meet that Friday, March 13th deadline. It was so vague and confusing. So you then turn to the web, which then analyzes things like the president's statement, and there are you go back to social media, and there are amendments, and there's more information. So, you know, it can lead you in the right direction. It can make you confused. You just have to use what I said before, your best judgment. If you don't think something seems right, research it. We did. And, you know, look, in this day and age where information moves at the speed of light, we're never going to get away from it, but you just have to make sure what you're reading comes from a verified source and it's accurate.
Mark Levithan?
Yeah.
Social media.
I think social media, there's a lot of people that are on there that are really starting to take it seriously now. I mean, they're starting to stay home. You know, people are going out to parties and having dinner parties that you see what they do, and they put their pictures up and, you know, on Facebook. And I think that's happening. I think it's really starting to dissipate at this point. And I think people are really taking it serious. But social media, you know, everybody has a platform to speak on. And, you know, I think some of the stuff there is good, and some of it's, you know, people aren't really, you know, paying attention the way they really should. It's a very serious thing.
You know, it's interesting. I posted something on social media. My wife and I have a different, you know, political perspective, and which leads to some good conversation, I guess you could say. How about spirited conversation? But I said, and I posted this on Facebook, and Jerry, tell me your thoughts here. I posted, and this was a couple days ago, so we're going back. This is not a case now. I'd like to see what would happen if I posted again, because I wasn't feeling very political. I was more concerned about the strength of the virus, as I still am. But my question was to the people, is somebody telling me that they're shutting down? This is right after the NBA and MLB shut down, and but not before, you know, before a couple of days ago where the world was still somewhat active. But I said, is somebody telling me that we're shutting down all major sports, billions of dollars worth, plus all these businesses affecting our entire economy, for a virus that is not much more powerful than the flu? Okay, that was my question, and I was actually asking the question. I wasn't getting political, man. The political answers I got back, my wife started yelling at me. I actually took it down. But Jerry, what do you think?
Well, I don't know. I might want to talk to your wife, see what if her political perspective sensible. No. But that, I mean, Joe, look, the question, I absolutely believe that you were just asking the question.
I was. But
of course, it is a question. And again, this goes back to what we've all been saying this whole time, how, you know, messages on social media are interpreted from the perspective of whoever sees the message. So that question could be interpreted as a political question or as a something poo-pooing the virus, even though you did not mean that. Or it, or whatever. It could mean that somebody could interpret it to mean that you were, you know, a foreign agent. Who? That's the problem that we're dealing with now. So to go back to the original question, it seems to me, it's not much to add to what the three of you guys have already said, but I think you really need to narrow down the list of people as to this, certainly as to this crisis, that you're willing to listen to. Okay, Dr. Fauci, if he says something, listen to it. Maybe if somebody else says something, take it with a large grain of salt.
Well, I saw that post of one of the doctors. It was one of the infectious disease. I don't know if anybody's, forget the guy's name, but it was on social media and it was a video. After the video, he is a, he's got his own weekly show and he does sports and I forget his name. I think he does the Ultimate Fighting. And he's like, he had this infectious disease guy on. And after the stats got done, I literally called my wife and I said, can you come downstairs for a second and check this out? Should we be updating our worlds? I'm not joking. There's so much on there. And the guy was smart and I Wikipedia'd him. And at the end of the day, I don't think he was being real political. I think he was giving his exact, opinion on it. Let's segue to the media, gentlemen. And right now, the four of us on here are part of it. Perspective on John Coucher on the media and the 24/7 coverage, even ESPN, which they are running a lot of special interest shows, 30 for 30, a lot of, rebroadcasts, and that's great. But my point is, the media's impact is so epic that it can't be imagined. Having said that, what is your perspective on it, John?
Yeah, I think it's similar to what Jerry said. Overall, I find the media's reporting helpful, but then you as an individual have to try to figure out what's factual, what's political, what's a little bit of both. And when Dr. Fauci from the National Institute of Health says something, he has the credibility that you stop and listen and implement what he's saying. Same with some of the other specialists they have there, Dr. Birx, maybe even the Surgeon General. And then messaging gets mixed when, the vice president holds a press conference and the president holds a press conference and says everything is fine and don't worry and don't panic and don't buy food in such a hurry. I think there's a layer there that you have to peel back and then listen to the experts. Even at the state level, when the governor is telling you to social distance and shuttering certain businesses, it's real and you have to follow it. And for the most part, I think the media has been helpful.
Mark, the media's impact can't be understated. It's 24 hours news, 24/7. And you talk about social distance. And I saw the other day, and kind of commenting on a little bit with what John just said, they had the managing director of the city of Philadelphia. I don't know if any of you guys saw that press conference, but so they have the mayor standing next to him, and you could tell this guy wasn't much of a politician because he was calling out the governor for shutting down the schools in Montgomery County. And that, therefore, when that happened, a lot of teachers in Montgomery County who teach in Philadelphia can no longer teach. So he was really... really kind of losing it because the media started asking him questions about why. And his answer was, why don't you call the governor's office? He's the reason why we got to shut our schools down. And at that point, and because we can't man our teachers can't come in. We don't have enough teachers to do it. Mark, your thought process in regards to, the media's impact on this. And, do you think it's, Do you think there's too much sensationalism going on? Do you think it's responsible? And do you think it's contributing to some of the social distancing that has people shutting down school systems?
Well, you know, it's the old story is with news, good news doesn't really sell newspapers from years ago when we had a lot of newspapers. Mm-hmm. Bad news sells newspapers. So the media kind of just plays on all this energy that's going out of what's happening and how scary it is, and you could die, and you could be, we're not going to have enough room in the hospitals. And they're just hyping it because that's what's getting their ratings up. They want people to listen to that. That's what's going to get people to watch more and more of it. I think they report it. Everybody has a different perspective on it, from depending on what station they're from and who the news person is reporting it. But I think really, we kind of really just need to focus and listen to the medical professionals, like Fauci, guys that really understand this. And listen to that, and hopefully the government can follow the guidelines, and the media just reports what we really should do from a medical perspective, and not scare the public to death.
And I want to ask Jerry, but do you think people are listening to the media, or do you think that they're reading between the lines a lot? Another, you know what I mean? Like people are making their own, creating their own conclusions, and panic starts from there.
Well, again. We've been talking about this, but I think, yes, everybody listens to the media. Everybody hears the media. It's almost like this virus. If you are alive in this society, you are exposed to the media. And it is true that the media, which are profit-driven, have a tendency to hype things, as Mark says. But on the other hand, none of that, and I know Mark doesn't mean to do this, either. None of that should understate or lead to an underestimation of how serious a problem this is. It just means that, people are very capable of common sense. And I think if people really listen to the media, not just be exposed to the media, if you really listen to the media, you can discern what makes sense and what doesn't. I mean, we're going to have to be on the lookout. Already there have been some, I'll call them criminals, who have been selling, bogus cures for this.
Oh, my God.
Bogus
kits.
Bogus tests for whether or not you have it. Things that range from the stupid to the
criminal.
Criminal. And
yeah, how about the guys that are selling the hand sanitizer for $70?
Yeah. Yeah. Price. And there's going to be price gouging. I mean, people have to use their common sense, and it's more and more difficult in the media climate in which we live.
You know what, Mark? Something that you said in regards to the, obviously the media is, there's a lot of sensationalism on. Guys, let me ask you a question in regards to crying wolf. And what I mean by that is this: with 24-hour news cycles and up to the minute. News and it's all, it's constantly, okay, since Ted Turner brought it into our life, and obviously, do you think that people are so used to the, some type of sensationalism, some type of, that they, in some cases, jumped on this too late, and they don't, in many cases, they don't know what to believe and what not to believe because they're so used to the bad news, okay, and in many cases, the sensationalism that's, some news stations are all political, and so they're so used to being fed, propaganda that they don't really know what's credible and what's not. Anybody pick that one, gentlemen?
Well, I'll go first. Yeah, I think that's a real problem, but maybe everybody should be reminded of the old saying, just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not after you.
Exactly.
And so, again, yes, take things with a grain of salt, but don't ignore facts.
And to me, when they started shutting down the Major League Baseball and the NBA, to me, that told me everything. John, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think we have to be careful because news is sensationalized, but I don't think we're dealing with a situation here where it's sources reporting, unnamed sources, and there's leaks. I mean, this is real. It's moving in real time. It's changing. We're hearing directly from the leaders in the government, the scientists. I think that the constant news coverage for this is actually a good thing. If you go back 6 months and, you know, we compare it to the impeachment hearings or the Mueller investigation, you know, you could make an argument that that constant coverage was not good for us. But I think that this is so important that we need information and we need to know, you know, if there are clusters and outbreaks and if healthcare systems are overloaded and if testing is available and where you can go to get tests, et cetera. You know, information is key and we need it.
You know, to me, I gauge it by the act, by some of the things that are happening around, you know, like we've talked about it a million times with the Major League Baseball and all that stuff. When I start seeing that stuff, now I understand, you know, now I'm getting it. And I think a lot of people felt the same. Let's talk about how this particular national situation compares to other national situations. You talk about 9/11, Jerry, you would mentioned, several other things. What in the regards to a national, this is international, but in your lifetime, and I'll say this to all three of you, how does this situation compare to other national, not epidemics, because I don't think there's anything, you know, but tell me what your thoughts are.
Well, I mean, first of all, we've seen other pandemics and worldwide epidemics before, some of them, you know, more fatal than this disease. AIDS is a big example. We've
sure.
seen AIDS in our lifetime. But there are, and you know, swine flu, SARS, all those illnesses.
But even, social media, again, wasn't around back then.
Even, that's true, but not to the same extent. Even there was a serious measles outbreak not too long ago. The difference here is, I mean, as horrible as AIDS was and how fatal the consequences were for
sure.
its victims, AIDS was something that the general population could feel removed from.
Right.
You know, if you avoid lifestyle problems or you engage in safe behaviors, then you cut down on the chances of getting the disease. The problem with this disease is, yes, there are things we can do to control its spread, but as of right now, nobody has really a good idea of how long we're going to be at risk. So I think people tend to feel less in control, strangely enough. You know, although things are starting to get done and there are many things that can be done. But that's what I think makes this different. It's created more of a feeling of helplessness in, you know, Americans in general.
It's completely invisible. Like, there's only so much control you can have over it.
Right.
John, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think to me it harkens back to the time after 9/11. People weren't flying. The airline industry took a hit. There was just almost like a lull socially. People didn't go out as often. There was a general sense of uneasiness. And then slowly but surely life got back to normalcy. I'm not sure when that will be here. I've been saying to my partners and my family for a few weeks now that I think we need a complete and total shutdown, and then we can hit the reset button.
Right.
2 weeks, 3 weeks. I mean, the economic impact of that would be drastic, but I don't know how the spread of the disease stops as long as, I mean, you know, in Philadelphia, I think the mayor is still having kids go to school. And bars and restaurants are open, and I don't understand certain decisions that are being made. But to me, it's 9/11, and eventually things will get back to normal.
And just to follow up on John's point, though, I mean, after 9/11, people could say correctly, resume your normal life. You know, if you don't, if we live in fear, the terrorists win. But you can't say that with respect to this disease. You can't say do everything as you were doing it before, because if you don't, the virus will win. No, it's the opposite. We have to change. We have to change what we do every day for some period of time that we're not sure of. You know, we didn't even shake hands when we saw each other,
right.
and for good reason.
And now it's getting to be, you know, normal. It's not like, in other words, first thing, you know, like your first thing you do is you reach over, shake somebody's hand. It's good to see you. But now, you know, it's no one's taking it personal. Guys, I'm going to ask you a question, and I'll lead off with Mark Levithan. you talk about 9/11, okay? And 9/11, we talk about, like John, you mentioned, eventually life got back to normal and all that. But one thing, you know, but there were changes. It changed our way of life, especially how we go to airports, no question. There was no question that there's an aftermath from 9/11, and changes were made that still exist today. You know, we have, you know, a whole entire industry based on, you know, national security now. What do you think could be the possible effects long term after this particular, you know, pandemic, you know, passes us by? Mark?
Well, I think I remember 9/11 like it was yesterday.
Sure.
I was in Miami when it happened. I was staying at a friend's house, and we were on vacation, and we were supposed to fly back the next day, and I had a car, that I had a rental car, and everybody was just so scared. It was so terrible. I mean, our nation was actually under attack. It was an act of war against our nation, where we were attacked in the United States, which is very unusual. I mean, the United States doesn't usually get hit like this. It happens in other lands. It doesn't happen here. And I remember calling the rental car company. He said, "Don't worry about it, Mr. Levithan. Take the car, drive it back to Philadelphia. No problem. There won't be any charge." And life was so different. It really was. What you said about the airports and how everybody was scared and, you know, what's going to happen. But I think this is a little different. We're not at war here. We're at a health issue that's really shutting down everything. With 9/11, our restaurants were still open. Our malls were still open. People may have been scared to go, but they still were open. Today, economically, this is going to be catastrophic, depending on what the government can do to help people, as far as hourly wage people losing their jobs, not working. Small businesses that can't survive 2-3 weeks a month without revenue coming in. So I think it could be a catastrophic economic experience for people in this country and other countries. And that's what kind of scares me, how people are going to recover from this.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, you know, it's you know, there's been some interesting conversations I've seen across the board on, you know, that the economical impact is going to far exceed the actual health pandemic. And so no question about that. Guys, my thought process in, you know, where changes, you know, will be made, I think it will be made in travel. You know, I think travel is going to be, especially, you know, they're going to come up with standards in regards to, you know, international travel. I also think that socially, you know, the handshaking is going to be, you know, that's going to be out the door, especially if depending upon where this thing is in a month. And you know, I've been elbow bumping people out of, you know, I'm one that's pretty, you know, typically easy going about a lot of things, but twice, you know, it's in the air.
No high fives.
No high fives. John, your thoughts?
Yeah, I share, you know, Mark's sentiment, your sentiment. I mean, it's hard to know where things will be. You know, my hope is that normalcy returns, the number of cases go down, you know, with increased testing, with social distancing, people practicing more vigilance. You know, you just hope that things can get back to normal. Things will change. Travel will change. I don't think the cruise industry will come back anytime soon.
Right.
You know, and there's just, I'm not an economist by any stretch of the imagination, but it's, you know, the stock market has to rebound. I think we're just in a state right now of flux, and there's a lot of moving parts, and hopefully at some point in the near future, those moving parts can slow down to the point where we can at least predict when there'll be a return to our normal activities.
Jerry?
Well, I like to think of silver linings, and I think there's a couple here. I mean, one thing I'm not too optimistic about is that we'll keep this spirit of community and caring for each other for too long. And I only say that because of our conversation about 9/11. We all had that after 9/11. You know, our country was under attack. We're one people. We stand united. And that feeling dissolved in a matter of weeks, really. But I am hopeful about one thing. I do think that this may teach us some lessons about the importance of having experts in the federal government, having a federal government that is proactive, having a federal government that's able to help states with crises, and it may help us revise some of our negative attitudes toward things like governmental regulation, safety rules, and government funding.
Having said that, do you think the paranoia will, in other words, thinking about the precautions that, well, we got about 5 minutes left, but the precautions that we're creating here, and having set such a precedent in all of our lifetimes, having said that, because we've heard, you know, what was it? What was the epidemic that was that was going around when Obama was president, the N1 or what?
Swine
flu.
Well, and Ebola, and there were.
But my point is,
epidemics.
Do you think that, and we seem to get through that, and so do you guys think that in the future we will be more apt to jump the gun and shut everything down quickly? I mean, this sets a major precedent. And in some cases, do you think this is a form of, and guys, this has to do with the medical, and I'm asking this question, but, and I want your honest opinion, of social correctness, political correctness, where people are like, okay, that school system shut down, I'm shutting down. Or in many cases, is it responsibility? Jerry?
Yeah, well, I'll jump in because I think that really follows up on my last point. I think if we learn a lesson here, it's a lesson to be prepared, and to be prepared with science and facts and expertise with adequate funding. If we learn that lesson, then we won't have to worry about overreacting or any version of political correctness or mass hysteria or any of these terms that come to mind in connection with this crisis.
Mark Levithan?
Yeah, I would have to agree with Jerry. I think we need to leave it, you know, up to the experts who know a lot more about this than I do, and try to follow their lead and try to be prepared. Nobody ever believed something like this could really happen, but sure, it did. And we need to be prepared, and hopefully we have people smart enough in our government and in our medical community that can help us do this.
John Coucher?
Yeah, I think that was well said by both Mark and Jerry. And when we look back at this coronavirus, I mean, I think when people study the response, the horse was out of the barn quickly, and I don't know how prompt and effective the administration response was right away, and that'll be a learning tool. But I think what we will realize is that the funding for the CDC and its other relevant agencies is so critical. And viruses, just like terrorism and war and drug abuse can be a national emergency. It can be thought of as a national security concern, and it has to be treated that way.
And I don't mean to plug a book, but there is a book written by Michael Lewis, who wrote Moneyball, a subject of interest to Joe and me in our baseball fandom.
Yep.
But one of his, I think it's his most recent book, is called The Fifth Risk. And it is literally about that. It was written before the coronavirus hit, of course, but it's about how important the professionals and the in the various departments of government and their funding and the support we give them, how important that is in keeping us safe, not just running the government, but keeping us alive.
Gentlemen, we're down to the last couple of minutes. If you will, Jerry Williams, tell our listeners your the contact information for your practice and the specialties that you guys handle.
All right. My firm is William Cedar. We have offices in Philadelphia and Haddonfield, New Jersey. www.wcblegal.com will get you to our website. The telephone number is 215-557-0099. We handle a variety of complex litigations for plaintiffs, including civil rights work, clergy abuse work, and environmental litigation, and including something that feeds off John's practice area, workplace injuries involving third parties, not the employer, but third parties.
And John Coucher, tell everybody the contact information and, of course, what you guys do.
Yeah, sure, Joe. Pearson Coucher Law is a boutique law firm. We specialize in handling workers' compensation cases just for the injured worker. That's all we do. We have offices in Philadelphia and in the Lehigh Valley in Bethlehem. The website is www.pearsoncoucherlaw.com. We make house visits. We, at this time, can discuss, information with clients over the phone and meet clients at a later time, but we have offices that are up and running. Phone number is 215-627-0700.
Mark Levithan, real quick, contact information at Wineman Payne and Wellness and what you guys do.
Sure. We're located at 1617 JFK Boulevard, 1 Penn Center, right above Suburban Station. We're Suite 1100. We are a complete medical practice with a physical therapy center. With about 35 different people that work in here that assist the physicians, and we can handle any type of work injury possible to help help injured workers get back to work and work with their attorneys.
Gentlemen, I want to thank you all so much for joining us and for the incredible conversation. I want to thank Jerry Williams of Williams Cedar. I want to thank Mark Levithan, our sponsor, representing our sponsor, Wineman Payne and Wellness, Serious Doctors for Serious Injuries. And I want to thank our host, John Coucher of Pearson Coucher. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us on the Pearson Coucher Show. We're sponsored by Wineman Payne and Wellness, Serious Doctors for Serious Injuries. I am Joe Doherty, your co-host. Thanks so much for listening.